Okay, so let's go ahead and call the May 1st council meeting, city council meeting to order. And we begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call.
Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari? Councilmember Mead?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Last week, Councilmember Cavallari told us he would be out of town on vacation, so maybe we have a motion to excuse.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passed unanimously. Next up is audience communication. We don't have anybody signed up. Does anybody want to talk to the council? Okay. So next up is a proclamation on the Music for Life program. We have Mark Wilder here with us who will accept the proclamation. I guess he's a volunteer and a member of the Mill Creek community. Music for Life is a nonprofit organization that provides musical instruments to children in the schools that would otherwise not be able to participate in music programs. Over the past year, Music for Life has provided over 200 musical instruments to the Everett School District. Right now, 11 of those instruments are being played by students at Heatherwood Middle School, and 12 are being played at Jackson High School. Music for Life is hosting an event at the Everett Civic Auditorium on May 3rd to raise awareness that musical instruments are available to public school children in need. And our own council member, Steckler, will be representing us in attendance. So with that, I will read the proclamation. Whereas the benefits of participation in instrumental music at any age can last a lifetime. And whereas research shows that students who participate in instrumental music programs do better in math, science, history, literature, international languages, reading and writing, even in computer science and other academic disciplines. And whereas music education is an integral part of a well-rounded education that prepares students for success in life by teaching teamwork and discipline. And whereas the cost of owning or renting an instrument is a barrier preventing students from low-income families from participating in instrumental music. And whereas many adults have lovingly used musical instruments stored in their garages or attics that they no longer use. And whereas Music for Life is a nonprofit organization that has been repairing and providing ready-to-play musical instruments to participating public schools for use by students since 2007, and whereas Music for Life has provided approximately 2,000 musical instruments to children in the greater Seattle area, including those attending Jackson High School and Heatherwood Middle School in Mill Creek, now therefore, I, Pam Pruitt, the mayor of the city of Mill Creek, on behalf of the city council, do hereby recognize the great work of Music for Life and designate the month of May as Music for Life Month. So we have a proclamation for you, and we usually take a group picture.
Yes.
We're all dressed.
Right in the middle, by the mayor.
By the way, I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow. Or no. Thursday.
Yes, right. Thursday.
Great.
Hi.
There you go. This is a great program.
Thank
I was
you very
never
much.
Musical, but let's take this off. Maybe not for me.
Right.
All right. Are we ready? One, two, three. I'm going to get one more just in case. One, two, three. Perfect. Thank you, guys.
You actually got flat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Looking forward to the concert. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Okay. Old business. Sweetwater Ranch Stormwater Project. Tina. All that nice stuff of that.
So good evening, Council. So I'm here to update you on
the Sweetwater Sweetwater Ranch project, and also to request a proposed motion, I suppose. Just kind of going back and making sure that we're bringing the entire council and public up to speed. On March 13th, we came to council with this project with a resolution to declare an emergency for the sinkholes that had occurred there as a result of the condition of the 36-inch diameter corrugated metal pipe CMP. That resolution passed, and also on that same evening, we came with a motion to execute a small public works contract with Shoreline Construction in an amount not to exceed $250,000 for the rehabilitation and replacement of that same CMP. At that time, we anticipated that the rehabilitation would occur via a slip lining methodology, should the condition of the pipe allow it. And one of the first items of work that the contractor had was to conduct an inspection of CCTV to confirm the condition of the pipe underneath the road. So construction began on April 9th, and the CCTV was in the first order of work. And so we did learn about the condition of the pipe in the areas that we had not been previously able to CCTV. And the condition of the pipe is poor, and we have a misaligned pipe with portions of it in the bottom missing. So it became clear that given the condition of the pipe, slip lining was not a method that was going to be physically possible. You just can't insert a pipe inside a pipe in another pipe that is in that poor of a condition and missing portions. And so we started exploring options as to what can be done. As we were fixing the two sinkholes that occurred, the first one occurred in December and the second one occurred in February of this year, the weight of the construction equipment caused two additional sinkholes to develop north of 144th on private property. So by April, early April, we had a total of four sinkholes developed above that CMP line. Clearly, again, demonstrating the poor condition of the pipe. So that's as far as the slip lining. As we were doing these fixes of the sinkholes, the other thing that became very clear was that all of the water that's running in that pipe, or that we originally thought that was running in the pipe, is actually not running in the pipe. It is also pouring out underneath the pipe and along the pipe. So in the past, like in December, when we opened manholes downstream and we looked at the 36-inch diameter pipe and it was only a quarter to a third full, now it makes a lot of sense because not all the water is running in the pipe. It's some of it is not, we couldn't get a visual on it because it's running outside. So, of course, that condition, that situation makes the soil around the pipe extremely wet because this has been happening for what appears to be a long time. So when working on the CMP, we have very wet soil. We also have very loose and wet soil, even in elevations much higher, so closer to the ground. Given that condition, given that situation, and the fact that we're working within a 30-foot easement between homes, we have homes on the south side of the street, we have homes on the north side of the street, we have a 30-foot easement between one wall and the other wall, the contractor and I feel that because of risk management, open trenching is not a feasible option in this location, and a trenchless method is preferred. Of course, trenchless is more costly, has less vibration, you manage the risk better, but it is a more sophisticated operation. So I've had multiple meetings with Shoreline Construction, who's the prime, and also Northwest Boring. They're proposing to do what's called a guided boring methodology. It uses technology, and just yesterday I had a very detailed explanation from Northwest Boring as to what's involved in this. There's still some components that will require large pits. We're proposing to have a large pit on the north side of the street and then one on each end of the pipe. We've coordinated, we've spoken with the property owners that are impacted, but pending tonight's motion, we'll do further coordination. The methodology is very precise. It includes technology that you can get within a quarter of an inch in a 400-foot-long stretch, and we're less than 400 feet. We're at 250 to 260. With this proposal, because of the proximity to the homes, we're proposing to move the line further east so that we're not so that we're in the middle of the easement rather than closer to the homes on the west. The current CMP is closer to the homes on the west. It's not exactly in the center of the 30-foot easement. So to reduce risk, we're proposing to realign the pipe so that we're right above what would be the fence, the existing wood fence. It would be a 27-inch Vylon, and again, using the guided boring methodology. The increase in price, so I included a table in the second page of the agenda summary. We have an estimate from Shoreline Construction. Because this is an emergency project, it is handled a little different than your traditional design bid build where there's bids for bid items. This is a force account contract where it's time, materials, and equipment, and that is how the contractor bills the city. So I'm calling it an estimate because that's what it is. I included a 15% contingency and also the inspection cost from Blue Line to inspect during the 6 weeks of construction. That's what it's anticipated to take.
Yes.
Question. So there's two issues of why the cost changes. One is you found multiple breakdowns in the pipe, correct? And then your decision to do a boring method versus the trench. How much of that cost increase is due to the boring versus the trench?
Most of the cost increase is due to the boring. That's the most significant cost.
Okay.
Yes, so open trenching would be less expensive but riskier because of the type of soils and because of the proximity to the homes.
Let me understand the risk. Is it that it could cause collapse of the roads, the ground? What is the risk?
Cracking of foundations of homes.
Okay. Because you're digging a big trench as opposed to just boring through.
Correct.
Where you want to put the pipe.
Correct.
Are you going to leave the bed pipe in the ground?
Yes, so that's a great question. We would leave it but fill it in. So it wouldn't be a void CMP. It would be filled up with very similar material to the one that we're using on 35th, which is cellular fill. So essentially it's going to be, for lack of a better word, a concrete stick, 36-inch diameter, and then the manholes that stick up to the ground would be filled up. So you would have essentially a U-shaped concrete fill.
And then will the soil that's currently moving with the water, will that stop moving?
Well, it's going to take some time for settlement, so that's part of the contract. We'll compact the soils after the existing CMP is filled up to reduce future settlement. It doesn't happen immediately after the concrete the CMP is filled. So we're going to do compaction afterwards at the end, and it should minimize completely settlement at that point.
Was this subdivision, I know some subdivisions are built on compressed chicken wire and compressed sand or soil over it. Is this a stable substrate for the road and this new pipe?
Well, I'm not familiar with the soils out there, so one of the situations with an emergency contract is that we don't do a design. So we didn't have geotechnical borings to show what the stratums of the different, the soil is. All we do know is that when we've opened up the soil or the sinkholes at the locations where we need it to, the soil is very loose and wet and tends to cave into itself. So it's not conducive for open trenching.
So I'm having a hard time understanding this picture.
Yes.
Because it looks like the original black line showed an existing ground that is a lot higher than the red line existing
yes.
ground. So the as-built wasn't accurate. I'm struggling.
Yeah, so because we didn't have a full design phase, we used LiDAR, which is less precise technology. So we didn't have a survey that showed a single surface elevation. Just last week, what we did do was survey the easement to make sure that we stay within that easement and all the construction happens within that easement.
So that doesn't reflect, because there's an existing catch basin on the north end.
Correct.
There's an existing catch basin on the south end.
And there's utilities running along 144 in parallel to the CMP as well.
Yeah, in there, okay. Okay, so the original piece, okay, so we know what that original catch basin on the right side, which is the north end, that had the invert and the crown at the right place. Oh, and the other one did kind of too. I'm trying to figure out why is this catch basin further downstream than too? Is that the existing catch basin we're not going to use?
The dash line catch basin 594, that's the existing catch basin on the side yard of Ms. Armida's property. So that's an existing one.
This is going to be an entirely new one down here.
That's correct.
So it's further downstream.
Okay, that's correct.
Okay.
So that existing one will be abandoned and filled in, and so will the one on the north end, which is existing catch basin 47.
Okay.
Those will be filled up, and essentially what we'll have is a huge U-shaped concrete block so that there's no further settlement.
When somebody digs
this
up in 50 years.
Councilmember Steckler asked the same question I would. It's like, oh gosh, you really wish you could use trench box or sheet piles or something or other. And I get it, there's some risk to this, but this adds a lot to the price.
That's correct.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's correct.
You're open trenching, this is to be a couple hundred thousand dollars different from what we were going to slip line, not $480,000.
And open trenching would have been, from a cost perspective, the second best option, but not from a risk perspective.
I'm just going to ask the question, not that I want to go there, but so if we engage in a project and something goes wrong, like in this case we have an open trench and it caves in or whatever and we've cracked a foundation, does the city have insurance that we draw on for that, or is it all on our nickel? And that may be a question beyond what you know, and maybe it's even beyond what Peggy knows. But at some point, I appreciate that this is the safest way to go, and it takes all the risk, and we pay for all the risk. So this is the safest way to go. If you got lots of money, you take the very safest approach. But the other approach is to say, okay, we have insurance for a reason, and maybe this is just so wet and mucky you can't do it. But it's pretty deep, although it's not as deep as we thought it was, because the elevation, actually, once you've shot it, it's not as deep as we thought it was. But I sure wish we could trench box it or sheet pile it or something or other and take some risk.
So there's a risk management component on all parties. Shoreline Construction, we discussed this, and they would not conduct the work unless it was through boring because it's a risk on their part as well. So the site currently is buttoned up. However, if the city opted to not proceed with the current emergency contract and go for a design bid build, we would have to design it and award to the lowest bidder. And at that point, we don't know the qualifications of the lowest bidder. They may opt to do open trench, and again, it's a risk for the contractor, it's a risk for the city and the property owners.
30-foot easement, and then the houses are back. How far from the easement are they touching?
They're right at the wall. The 30-foot easement is from wall to wall.
It is risky. I hear you right, boring is no risk?
Well, there's no such thing as no risk. It is the least risky. So there's essentially no vibration. However, one of the things that happens, even with boring, we're augering slowly, the soil is moving, and we know that the soil out there is very wet. So there could be that additional sinkholes develop above the CMP. Now, when this operation happens, and as we're digging the pits, the one on the road and the one on either side, we're going to create essentially a steel road, steel plates from one end to another. So all this equipment is moving along steel plates. So that reduces the risk, but there's still that possibility.
Bertha's little sister?
Yeah.
Neighbors.
Seems like that.
Will they wait until the road, would it help to wait until the soil dries out a little bit?
It could, but it's not going to dry up that much to make a big difference as far as the risk.
Is it high groundwater? What's causing the soil to be so moist? Is it this?
Part of it is the fact that it's escaping the current CMP, so that's happening at the lower elevations. And just even at the higher elevations, the soil is very wet. Some of that may be due to rain, and some of it may be just the type of soil that we have out there.
You got to figure this was size of 36 inches. It was meant to carry a lot of water during rainy periods. We just had the second wettest month in the last few years or something. It's double the normal amount. So.
Is it 27 inch?
Yes, because it's a different material. So it has a lower coefficient of friction than the original CMP.
And it allows to hold the water in?
That's correct. We've done that design. So. So one of the things I also wanted to mention is that, as council is aware, we have a surface water program that Pertit is in the process of developing for us. And from my perspective, there's a lot of lessons learned on this project so far, because what Pertit is, in the submittals that I received from Pertit so far, this is not unique to just Sweetwater Ranch, where we have utility lines or surface water lines running in between homes. So the lessons that are being learned on this project will also be applicable to what Pertit is going to be delivering in August.
As in, all the expenses.
Well, I mean, they took 4 years worth of movies and didn't look at them. We don't know what's there. Are they reviewing all those tapes?
Yes, they are. Reported since 2012.
Okay, what's the council's pleasure? We have a motion to authorize the city manager to execute an amendment to contract 2018-1418 for construction services with Shoreline Construction Company in the amount not to exceed $480,000.
Seeing no other option, I will make that motion.
I'll second it.
Yeah, so luckily we're a city that has money in the bank, but do we have money in the stormwater account for this?
We have about $830,000 in the stormwater. Depending on how this goes, I mean, that's all we have. We also have a requirement to maintain a reserved fund of $100,000 at the end of the biennium. I've been looking at ways that we can finance this through, you know, the public state public works fund. That's a no. They have two different programs, but we don't qualify for each. Gene and I both talked to the Department of Ecology, and there's no financing available there. One thing that I've talked with Tony at MRSC to see if we can use REIT funds to I wouldn't suggest that we would use them maybe in like a loan fashion, because if you all recall, the Surface Water Fund is an enterprise fund, and it's supposed to support itself through fees. And if we use REIT money, or another idea is to use general fund money to shore up any shortfall, we would want to do that in a loan so that we could get the money back out. I do have a response back from the SAO on the REIT, and they suggest that we talk with council to see what our CFP plan says, to see if it's even available to use. So two conflicting answers on whether REIT's available.
But we have the cash on hand to do this.
Yeah, we have liquid cash.
And we can work out the formal financing.
Yes. Yeah, in the next month.
A couple of months, but right now we need to get moving on this.
Right.
And I do believe this will be an important discussion, because we're going to be looking at our stormwater program as part of our CIP, in addition to finding out what's really going on under our roads. So it's going to be a comprehensive plan.
Mm-hmm.
brief Mike's part.
Your rainy day fund just got rained out, basically. This is, you know,
it would wipe it out.
Wipe it out. So this is going to, the next emergency that happens, we will have a much tougher time with. And so the good news is we have a rainy day fund, but the bad news is, like Pam said, or like Mayor says, there's a lot of planning that needs to be done. So all those years we thought we were sitting pretty good on stuff, it just takes one of these.
Sam. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Passage unanimously. Okay. Painfully.
Yeah, painfully, sadly.
Okay, reports.
Council Member Todd for our report.
Come on, you're going to take it.
No? Council Member Meade.
No report.
Just a couple items. I'm surprised Council Member Stecker didn't mention this. It's my annual plug for the Mill Creek Choral's annual spring concert, May 12th. This year it's big enough. It's at Glacier Peak Performing Arts Center. Council Member Stecker's wife is also on the choral with my wife. So there's two shows, 3 and 7. Ben 7, and Gina has a flyer that she'll put up. It has information on tickets. The only other item is for my day job, I had the opportunity to meet yesterday with Representative Del Bene and with Representative Larson today, and one of the builder's issues was issues with the Corps. So I threw on my city hat and put in a plug for us with 35th to try to get some more certainty, and I told him about the abyss we're about to go into with 35th and not knowing what's going to come out of that. So put in a shameless plug for the city as well. That's all.
You did mention April 22nd, Mayor Pro Tem Holzbod and Vice Mayor were proud to put a new sash on the badge.
No, he got a pin. He already had his merit badge sash, so yeah.
He's now an Eagle Scout.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're invited to come and watch, and it's a very proud moment for all involved. So
great event.
Yep. Councilmember Todd.
Thanks. The thing that's on our table here, on the right-hand column under federal, the second item, Covert's case heard in U.S. Supreme Court. We were talking about this some with respect to 35th, and I followed that link. If you care to follow that link in the email that you got, I was going to bring a copy of it, but I forgot to. The issue is that the tribes basically have said to the state, you got till 2030 to eliminate all the fish passage carriers. It's fish passage barriers. It's billions of dollars for the state. The reason the cities care about it, because cities and counties also probably have billions of dollars worth of culverts that are similar. So I didn't realize this has already gone to the Ninth Court of Appeals, Ninth District.
Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
And it's already been there, and so now it's at the Supreme Court to talk about the implications in terms of how this weighs out. But this is a big deal, and as Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw was telling me before we got started, this is kind of a huge deal that not many people know about, but this is probably the one reason that the state has kind of put more pressure on us to talk about daylighting that stream, I would suspect. AWC there's a whole fish barrier passage board or something or other, and there was a set of funding this year, $51 million. AWC had encouraged cities to get out there and apply for it, even if they didn't have enough money. We're trying to point out that cities also need funds to do this, and so I think this is something we should look at in the next cycle around. They just did the 17 through 19 money, but we ought to take a look at working with RIA 8 and seeing if this 35th and the one that's underneath Village Green Drive would be eligible. In terms of whether the fish are there or not. If the fish aren't there, then we don't have to worry about it. But if the fish are there, then we're going to have to remove those at some point. So we got to start working on getting in line for these grants for the next cycle that comes up. So, Councilmember Steckler and I spent a fun day back in Little Triangle Room last Friday, and our objective was to kind of go through all of the brainstorming we had done on all those pieces of paper. Gina P helped us get all the pieces of paper out there, and we were looking at them to say, you know, what can we pull out of this to kind of take the next step. And
I think we made a few changes here and there, and we've got some philosophical questions and some observations that I think we're talking about trying to get on the agenda for next week. Yes. Is that right? So we got kind of a draft that we would like to run by you guys, some more thoughts about how to turn this into a vision and a mission for maybe not just the city, but kind of the whole community, and then how does the city's mission fit into that, and then what are strategies that go along with it. We've got some ideas to kind of pose to you, so we'd like to have that on the agenda next week if we could, to kind of take it, keep this whole thing moving. It was a fun day, exciting day. We kind of burned out towards the end, but I think we made some progress on kind of moving us to the next step. I think ultimately we want to get to the point where we can take this and send out to the community and say, what do you think? How does this fit? And I think the community is broader than just the city doing stuff, and so it'll be kind of exciting to do it during the festivals or whatever's going on this summer. So, exciting times. Did I get it right?
You did.
Okay, thanks.
And the purpose next week is just to inform. No decisions need to be made. Just inform where Council Member Todd and I came to and get your input, give you a chance to think about it, see the direction that we were going.
And Council Member Steckler will be running the presentation next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay, we have our tentative planning schedule. Is there any other reports from staff? Okay, next up is audience communication. Anybody want to talk to the council? Going once, twice? Okay, and then finally, we are going to have an executive session tonight. Purpose is litigation.
Right under RCW 42-3110-1I to discuss potential or pending litigation.
Thank you. And how long do you need? 20
minutes.
So why don't we go up to 30 minutes?
Because
then we can all listen back.
No action is expected.
Excellent. Thank you.
Would you mind writing down and maybe emailing me what time you reconvene a regular session and then adjourn? It's usually the same minute, but
okay.
I'll just need to know for the minutes.
All right.
Thank you very much.
I printed it.